Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that's been attempting to push bosses off a cliff ever since playing tonight's episode. I'm your host, David Lloyd, and I'm looking forward to distracting myself from the Dark Urge by talking about a title that's easily my game of the year so far, Baldur's Gate 3. The rest of the pub is catching up to me, so we're going to have some discussions about some of our crazy experiences, and just let people know, we won't be getting into very specific spoilers, but I do want to warn those sensitive to spoilers that I would describe this as spoilery, this episode. There'll be some, we won't really be getting into the main quest, but we will be talking about some of the fun things that you can do, probably in the later acts. But as this is such a hugely massive game, no two people are going to have the same experiences. So I think for the most part, you're safe if you haven't quite got to the end of this game. But sitting immediately to my right at this digital table is a man who's thrown his fair share of dice. It's Jordan Rudick.
I know. I wonder if pushing bosses off a cliff in Baldur's Gate 3 is the equivalent in other RPGs, like using like a life spell on a boss to kill them in one hit, or using like a heal potion or something like that. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think, like, what's the analog in different RPGs to, you know, the one hit kind of cheesing of a boss? I'm not sure. I obviously we've done them, but it is kind of a funny way to take care of business here.
It's very apt to comparison. I immediately think of the president in Final Fantasy VIII, or the fake president that you find on the train, and you can just one shot him with the Phoenix down.
Yeah, exactly. I think that as soon as you mentioned that in the notes here, I'm like, that's going to think about, okay, yeah, using Phoenix downs, using items like that to just make something incredibly easy. And I guess that's what's happening here too.
Yeah, well, we're in the age where cheat codes don't exist anymore, so I have to give it to Larian for. We'll get into it more later, but they certainly have their own version of cheat codes embedded in the game if you can find them. So I'm
this is tabletop role playing, right? It's being able to try things that you think may or may not work, and just seeing what happens. And there's just so much trial and error in this game, especially for someone not well versed in D&D. Just kind of trying to learn, like, all the little things that are happening behind the scenes, the extent of the ways I can experiment in and out of combat. Like, so much of it is unfamiliar to me, and so I feel like every time I play, I don't necessarily get very far, but I have a long session because a lot of it is just kind of feeling my way around in the dark, and that's fine. Like, I still enjoy it. It's just I can't sit down with this game for like 30 minutes. Like, I won't. Nothing will get done. Like, it has to be like an hour to 2 hour session for me. Or else I probably won't do it if I don't have that time. I have to really kind of have that space to play around a little bit more.
Yeah, and in fairness to me, I learned that you could kill bosses by pushing them down cliffs. By myself being, I was fighting a boss and I got thrown down the chasm. So yes. So I immediately
Monkey
went, wait a minute.
Yeah.
If this
if you
is the thing.
If you can do that, yeah. I can do it too.
It was like a Three Stooges. Oh, wise guy. Eh?
That's good. That's good. I like the Three Stooges reference. I was just listening to an episode of What a Cartoon, the Talk Simpsons podcast guys. And they were talking about King of the Hill. And that episode was kind of parodying or riffing on Three Stooges. So I've got Three Stooges on the brain, so I like that.
Before we get into it, though, I just want to do a couple of quick plugs at the beginning. First is, as always, our Patreon. So I'm on a definite schedule now of getting them out a week early, so you can both help support the podcast and get episodes a week early in advance through patreon.com/thethirstymage. And you also get to chime in on content. So if you want a particular game, you can let us know and we can get that done. The other thing I wanted to plug is recently just became a Patreon member for Backlogged. I figured I had put so many hours into the Backlogged website that they had earned my money. I'm a little scared at the amount of information that I've put in. I'm up to 75 games journaled, and I'm still working on my 2022. I started with 2023 and started working my way backwards. And all it's really told me is I play a lot of video games. Maybe too much if someone
Yeah, that's my fear about installing this app is just realizing, you know, how far gone am I, or what black hole, what chasm am I staring at here? You know, but I think I will try to some point see how you in case you were getting in on that. So
yeah, well, it's pretty good. I've been journaling the stuff I've been playing now, just so that it was mentioned. I actually got it from Laldegal on Discord the recommendation. And it's been very helpful, even just keeping notes, because often we'll play a game, but we might not talk about it for a few weeks. So
yeah,
it's
true,
good to
true.
Have notes to go back and remind myself of some funny things that happened or things to remember, that sort of thing. So
well, it's nice to even just remember like a specific scene or moment, like because we do like to share those in particular, right? Which you don't necessarily wouldn't necessarily do in a review, but like those kind of minute details that I think people like hearing about us discuss, like that is a good opportunity for that too.
Yep. And yeah, so if you happen to go to it, so it's backlogged, BACKLOGGD, because in this day and age, we don't use vowels.
Nope.
And you can friend the Thirsty Mage. It's all me. That's my gameplay. That's not all of ours combined. I'm kind of representing the podcast on backlog. So yeah, head over and friend us. We'll friend you and we'll share some fun times. But getting to the topic at hand, so Baldur's Gate 3. So I finished it, I think, a week or two ago. Been trying to find any game that kind of satiate that need. So working on that, been playing a lot of games, but still all of it fresh in my mind. Jordan is in Act 2, working way through. And just to give a reminder or kind of a refresher for anyone who's not playing or hasn't played for a bit. So the kind of the story of Baldur's Gate 3 is that it starts off with kind of a Lovecraftian octopus ship flying through the air and kind of just picking up random people in random places and imprisoning them on the ship, and a mind flayer, exactly what you would think, like the octopusy face, is installing or dropping parasites into all the people that they've been capturing. So the parasites, it's kind of a gross scene where they drop the parasite into the eye and it kind of squirms its way behind everybody's mm-hmm. eyes. And I guess the whole point of it is that it kind of gestates inside the head, and then eventually you're supposed to, the infected will become mind flayers, is kind of the whole point of it. But the ship gets attacked and the prisoners get let free, and your character, depending on whether you choose one of the kind of predetermined characters or voiced acting characters, or if you just create your own, the person that you're playing as will be like kind of freed. And so like the prologue is just kind of you running around the ship trying to figure your way off. Act 1 is that the ship crashes and all of the characters that you would see and, you know, on the box art and that sort of thing are kind of scattered in this kind of countryside area. So Act 1 is you're kind of getting your bearings, building up your party, and the kind of underlying story is that you're trying to figure out how to get the parasites out of your brain. Eventually you find out that there's all these characters are congregating in this tower, and that's kind of where Act 2 takes place, is that you go to this tower, like the land around the tower, and you're kind of exploring there. And then Act 3 actually takes place at Baldur's Gate, right in front of it, I guess, the little town around it. And you get into a bunch of hijinks there. So yeah, Jordan, why don't you kick us off? I guess the point of this is just we're going to be sharing kind of some of the different experiences that we've had, some fun moments, funny stories, anecdotes, that sort of thing. So, Jordan, why don't you kick us off with something that happened to you that you enjoyed?
Yeah, maybe we'll go back and forth here. I have a ranger type character. I think it's some kind of elf, one of the elf variants. I don't know which one. I guess as I've been playing more ranger, I've been kind of realizing a little bit more about what my powers are. Like I can summon like an animal friend companion to assist me in fights, like a bear, a wolf, things like that. I usually use the bear. I can also summon like a little familiar, like something smaller, like a mouse or a spider as well to help me. So I like having a couple pets around, you know, that it's nice to have that damage soaking and doing a little bit of damage on their own as well. I have two companions. I have Shadowheart, who is a paladin or cleric. She's got some healing abilities. She's one of the, one of the initial characters that you meet very early on. She's got some powerful abilities too. When she gets up close, like a little bit more of a melee character, I think. But I like her, and I've been chatting her up in the camp as well, getting to know her a little bit, and so that's been fun. And then there's this kind of almost like death, capital D death figure in my camp, who allows me to like summon like a puppet kind of character as well, or he basically animates a character to join my team. So I've got a mage on my in my squad as well. So it's just the three of us, and then my pets. Before getting into the game, my hope or my intention was to play and try to avoid combat as much as possible. Like again, not being super familiar with like the intricacies of it and how everything works. In a game where I have that ability to maybe avoid combat a little bit more and talk my way out of it, I would like to do that. I enjoy that aspect of role-playing games. But those best laid plans have definitely not come to fruition. As it turns out, I've just been solving almost all of my problems through violence. So in Act One, the two kind of major, events for me where I ended up just killing everything, basically. The first one was the Goblin Camp. So I guess I'm trying to think of even what the purpose of going there is. Like you meet this grove of druids who they have some kind of conflict. There's these people who want to go there to be safe, but the druids want to kind of kick them out and kind of isolate themselves. And so you go to the Goblin Camp to rescue one of these druids. I think the leader of their camp.
Halson.
What's that, sorry?
His name is Halson.
Thank you. Yeah, and he's joined my camp as well, so I should be remembering that. So you go to rescue the leader of the druids to kind of help or save the grove. That's their big request to you. And he's super powerful. You end up if you do some fighting in the Goblin Camp, you can get him to fight with you, and he's super powerful. So that was fun. The talking my way out of it didn't really work. And by the time I found Halson kind of in a jail cell, kind of being taunted by some of the goblins and teased and throwing things at him, I let him out. And basically we get into a big fight. So the prison scene, there's already fighting happening there. And I'm like, oh, okay, like this part, I had no choice. Like, you know, to get him out of here, there was going to be bloodshed, I guess. Or I didn't know how I could solve it through talking. So I didn't. I just killed everybody in there. And then I'm like, okay, getting out of the prison area of the camp, I have to think, okay, now I've got this other task that Halson has given me that I need to basically eliminate three kind of goblin leaders, I guess, in the camp as well. And that's the only way to maybe stem the tide or to prevent them from kind of uprising or coming after the druid grove again. So after we leave the prison, I come out still with Halson on my team. And I guess our next thing is, okay, now we have to kill the three leaders. And basically every scene turns into there's no, you know, assassinating. There's no like sneaking around. I basically have to kill every single entity in this camp. It was never my intention going into the camp that's how it was going to be. And it wasn't just even inside the main fortress part of the camp. It was also outside. I had to fight everybody too. And so this took me hours. It took me hours to kill everything in there. And, you know, so much looting going on and corpses everywhere. And, you know, I didn't do any secret or special things. It was really just kind of brute forcing my way through. That was kind of my experience going through the Goblin Camp, was just, you know, I'm a ranger, so I'm using a bow. I've got the kind of paladin cleric woman with me as well, and she's doing the melee fighting. And then I've got some beasties with me that are also, you know, doing their kind of melee swiping attacks. And so we just kind of gutted it out, you know, using potions, using healing. I didn't have much of a chance to go back to camp to kind of replenish my spell points or to go buy more potions or anything like that. So it was pretty tough. Like, I feel like I had every battle, I had to be very kind of conscious about what I was doing and, you know, conserving points or trying to, use potions, use spells, you know, at the best possible time, hopefully get some good rolls on those. So it was pretty tough. Like I was very happy to be done with it all. And I was like, oh, you know, it would be nice to not have to do this again. But then a little bit later on, the same kind of thing would happen. But David, I want to know how you kind of solved that Goblin Camp situation, because I haven't talked to too many people about the game. I've kind of just been soloing it. So
I also solved it with violence, but also trickery. Because so what happened with me was that so I was a bard. And I was playing with Shadowheart the Cleric, Gale the Mage, and Karlak the Barbarian. And so, yeah, I went and got the quest from the druids, or from one of the druids anyway. I think the leader at the time didn't really care about Halston too much. But
yeah,
there was another person there that wanted me to go save him. So I went there. When I first got to the Goblin Camp, I was initially, like, the goblins initially... were not happy with my presence, but I intimidated them to the point where they're like, okay, you know, like through speech, I allowed them to let me just walk freely throughout the camp. So I was actually allowed to just walk around and do whatever I wanted because I had threatened to kill them all.
Something like that happened to me too. Like, I was walking around until I got to the prison and instigated the fight, and then everyone became hostile. Like, I had free reign of the place. I talked to all the leaders. I'd kind of told them, like, yeah, I'll help you out with your small task, and with no intention of doing that. So I was walking around okay until the prison break started, basically. And then all hell broke loose at that point. There was no animosity until I freed the druid. And then they're like, what are you doing here? You can't do that, obviously.
You must have had somebody escape from the prison, because it was the same for me. Like, I had went and talked to all three leaders. So I actually knew where they were. And when I went into the prison, I saw them there. And I killed everyone in that room. And then when I walked out of the room, no one had known I had done that. So I still was able to walk around. So what I ended up doing was there was like one main area of the Goblin Camp where one leader is kind of standing. And I noticed that there is another room a little further down where there's a gunpowder keg. So I dragged the gunpowder keg down from this other room and put it right in the middle of this room.
Yeah.
And what I did is I went up. You can get up into the ceiling and there's like rafters. So I put all four party members on this like narrow beam, and we were literally just standing over everyone watching from above. And if you time it right, like what happens is like every 2 minutes, all the goblins will come listen to the leader for a second and then they'll all walk away.
Yeah.
So I stood up there and I waited. And when they all got there, I had the mage shoot a firebolt at the powder keg, and it killed killed probably 90% of the people in the room.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so perfect.
Yeah, just one blast. They're just toast. And so there's only like three people left, and so we just shot them with arrows, and that was that. And so at that point, there was like nobody left in the room that knew I'd done this. So I just walked up to the next leader, and she was kind of in a corner away from everything. So I was able to like murder everyone in that room without anyone knowing. And then I came back and the devil was the last leader, and he was actually pretty powerful. So I threw a void bulb at him when he was near a chasm, and it one shot killed him because he fell into the chasm.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that in the notes. I wasn't sure where you're going with that. I like it though.
Yeah. So it was basically, if there was a boss near any kind of cliff, chasm, whatever, I was just saving the void bulbs. So basically what a void bulb is like a gravity bomb. You just throw it towards the cliff and it sucks everything around it, like towards the cliff. So
yeah,
basically like you don't have to worry about your strength or athletics or anything like that. You just throw the void bulb. It'll suck anything and it'll just fly it off the cliff and they're dead.
See, now this is where I don't have that wherewithal to think, okay, let's explore around, find gunpowder, set up the gunpowder, explode everybody, stand on the rafters. Like I guess I don't even think about that. Not having played a lot of CRPGs and just it not being like a genre I'm super well versed in. Again, I don't, my brain doesn't go to those. It's more like, I guess I'm more of a simpleton when it comes to a game like this. I'm like, okay, I can either talk to them and like persuade them to let me leave, or I can kill them. And it's just, those are the two options. There's no finessing it. There's no like, you know, other subterfuge or anything or kind of special tactics or techniques or anything like that. It's just those two options for me. And if there's no dialogue option and they're getting hostile and I exhaust all the dialogue trees, you look through all the options, all succeeding, all the rules, and I still not giving me what I want. Okay, we'll just fight. Then I'm like, you know, I'll spend a couple hours doing that. But I do like hearing about your way of solving that. And hopefully, you know, across the next couple acts that I have to get through here, I'll try to be more aware of like some other possibilities of like, okay, if I look around the castle a little bit more, maybe I'll find something that could be used in that way.
Yeah, there was a similar situation in the Grimforge where there was like all these characters in the middle of the room, and I had went and taken this gunpowder keg from like a dwarf or something like that. And I had intended to blow up everyone in that room, but I guess in all my preparations, so the room in particular, there's like this powerful mage that's stuck behind a wall, and you're supposed to get like this gunpowder to blow the wall up. But I was like, no, I'll just kill everyone in the room with it instead. Like, screw this guy. But I guess I took so long preparing for the gunpowder that the mage had died from asphyxiation on the other side.
Oh, yes,
wall.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that solves that. So I just pocketed the gunpowder and went on with my business.
Does that complete the quest? If his name is Near or Nair or something like that, he dies and then you're good to go?
Yep.
That's so funny.
It's hilarious.
That was a heck of a battle against him, actually. He was really tough. I did end up, I collected the gunpowder. I did everything very straight-laced. Like, they talk about getting the gunpowder around the Grimforge, go blow up the wall, let the guy out. He's a jerk, right? Like, he was like killing little goblins, and I'm like, don't hurt them, they're fine. But as soon as you say anything against him, he's like, he gets hostile against you. And I actually wanted to use him in the fight against the rest of the, I think they're Dwaegars, right? They're kind of like dark dwarves or something like that.
Yeah.
So in that fort, I wanted to use him a little bit to help me out fighting. Again, the same thing happened to me. Everyone got hostile against me for whatever reason. I think it must have been talking to that mage. Like, he's like, okay, I'm not going to suffer any incompetence. And he's kind of the one instigating fighting our way out of here. But at the very least, I had him on my team, so it was a little bit easier. It was at that point I did learn about, you know, being shoved off a cliff and dying. Because one of my characters was shoved into the lava pit and died. And so I was severely handicapped halfway through that fight because, one of the guys just ran over and just shoved him in the lava. And I'm like, what is going on here? I couldn't even believe that happened. But then I couldn't get him out. I couldn't go in to rescue him because he's in the lava. And I'm like, I'll leave him until the end of the fight and then see if I can figure it out there. But
yeah,
what a hassle that whole fight was.
When you beat the wizard, there's a lantern that he has. Was your lantern working when you got it?
No, it was broken. I found two broken moon lanterns, and I never got a chance to repair them. I've actually just picked up a working one in Act Two, so I guess I won't need to repair those anymore. But it would have been nice to have them repaired before I started Act Two. That's for sure.
So I got a funny story about that. I might have said it. I might have talked to. I can't remember if I talked about it with Paige in the last Boulder's Gate. But the story is, I had the broken ones too. So when I got to the Act Two area, and I was kind of walking through, trying to get to the inn that's mentioned as like a safe haven, and when I get there, I get to the inn, and there's people, and they're like, oh, you know, we'll take you to the tower that you're trying to get to or whatever. But there's these shadows, and we have to be really careful because we don't have this lantern that protects you from the shadows. So I'm like, okay. So they're guiding me there, and we get to this one like village that's like all destroyed, and they see this guards from the enemies. Like, they see these enemies walking around, and they have a lantern that's protecting them from the shadows, because the shadows will kill the enemies too. And the guy asked me, like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, wait here a minute. And so everyone's waiting in this building, and I walk out to these guards all by myself, and they're like, well, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, the leader sent me, give me your lantern.
That's good.
And they're like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, no, the leader told me you have to give me the lantern and you have to head back. And then they're like, well, if we give you the lantern, we'll have nothing to protect ourselves. And then I like threatened that their leader was going to come kill them if they didn't give me the lantern. So my deception was so high that they handed me the working lantern. And
nice.
Then they walked off. Like, they literally, they knew they were walking to their deaths because they were like protesting like the whole time. Like, don't let us go by ourselves. Like, no, you walk back to the castle without the lantern.
And now, then would they transform into those wraiths that you got to fight, or they just died? Like,
the wraiths killed them.
Oh, they did. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
Because what happens is that they're the, so you watch them in this cutscene walk into the dark and you hear the race killing them.
Yeah.
And then when the party comes out, you start walking and all their dead bodies are on the ground. So I looted them.
I may have come across that scene because in that area, this kind of initial part of Act Two, like you come across a bunch of kind of clearings where there's a lot of dead bodies. Like it's obvious that, you know, whoever's come here hasn't lasted very long, right? Like they're constantly coming across, you know, a party of corpses or skeletons and stuff like that, and until you find like any of the landmarks, like the little encampment that you find, or if you finally get to the Moonlight Towers, which I think is one of your main objectives, right? It's a very kind of tense situation at the beginning of Act Two, and I guess sometimes you think like, oh, the beginning of a new act, you know, it's going to be a little bit lighter. There's very little about Baldur's Gate 3 that's light. You know, some of the dialogue can be, but just the environments, the quests, the things that you're doing, like all of it is very heavy, serious, dark in tone. So I think you also have to be kind of prepared for that, or in that mood to play a game like that. There's not a lot of levity here, and so I guess for me, like, I'm not always in that mood for a heavier game, right? Like I'm playing some other lighter games on Switch for like review and stuff like that. And like, okay, they're a little much more light and I can kind of pick them up whenever, but Baldur's Gate, I have to be in a little bit more of a mood for that setting, that atmosphere, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. There's it's funny cause there's a lot of scenes they never certainly start off with levity, but, there's certainly opportunity to be.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. Like there's one in Act Three. There's again. I don't think it's like Baldur's. There's like it's mostly like a section of Baldur's Gate or something. Like there's the lower city that you're basically walking around, and I can kind of come across. It's like the bank is like Baldur City Bank. So I'm like, I walk in and I'm looking around. I'm like, hey, this is, you know, the guard. There's like tons of guards everywhere, and it's talking to the bank manager and find out that there's like a hostage situation going on and they're like down in the vaults or whatever. So I'm like, well, I'll take care of it for if you want. So the guy was like, okay, but like, don't steal anything. And so he gives me a pass I walk into the vaults and there's like two sections of these. It's supposed to be like where all like everyone keeps their like best stuff or whatever. And there's booby traps to try to keep you out, but there are ways to figure out how to get around the booby traps. So I started like, I had a very high thievery. So I figured out how to get around the booby traps. And then I had just high enough to unlock all the vaults. So as I'm like unlocking vaults, and there's some really high level stuff in there.
Yeah, I believe that.
It was incredible. I'm like stealing all this like great stuff or whatever. And I kind of like walked into a situation where like it's like this start of this other quest where you're seeing like these guys, they're trying to steal all this money. And I'm just like, oh, what's going on here? And then I end up like killing them all and getting a new companion. So it's like, but it was funny because like the guy, the bank guy down there is like, well, how'd you get in? What are you doing here? Yeah, and I'm like standing there with all the loot, you know. Right.
Yeah. Going somewhere with that?
Yeah, I was told to come help you. Yeah.
Just take it to the other bank across town. Yeah. That's a good one. I in the Underdark, which I guess is kind of close to the end of Act One, one of the last kind of larger areas, I guess you explore before you get to the Grimforge, and then it's one of the ways you can get to the beginning of Act Two. In the Underdark, there's this group of like these kind of mushroom looking guys, Myconids or something like that, I think they're called. So they're kind of just chilling down there, and they've got a couple kind of things they want you to do for them. The Dwemers, those dark dwarves, are causing them some trouble. So you can go kind of take care of them and help them out that way. You meet a shorter woman, and she's like, oh, I've lost my husband. Can you go and find him? And so you kind of look around, you see where the quest marker is. And I guess maybe before I realized it, he's kind of in this, he's collecting mushrooms or some kind of plant, and he's in the middle of all these kind of green bulbs. And if you shoot them, they explode in a cloud of poison. And he's in a field of like dozens of them. And so normally how I was getting through those kind of fields, I would shoot the bulbs with an arrow and then I would wait till the poison dissipated and then I would go, I'd walk through. But the first time I encountered this field and not realizing the guy was actually there, I didn't put two and two together. So I shot one of the bulbs with an arrow and there's this huge cascading effect, explosions everywhere, poison. I see someone running towards me, but their health is ticking down. They're constantly being poisoned. And I don't realize until, you know, all the poison's gone. I go and check his corpse. It was the guy I was looking for. And I realized that the quest has been like, pinged as being done or whatever. I'm like, oh, shoot. Like, I think I know what happened here. So I didn't go and talk to his wife after doing that. I ended up restarting because I wanted to actually talk to the guy and see what was going on there. So you kind of have to sneak your way through very kind of gingerly through the poison, plants. They're kind of like, they look like balloons or something like that. So you sneak your way through, you go talk to the guy, and then you kind of coax him to come out and you tell him it's all safe and everything like that. But it turns out the wife actually hates him, like that she, perhaps for good reason. Like, it sounds like he was kind of mistreating her and maybe abusing her. But then something happens to him and he loses like his mental faculties and he becomes kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of dumb. And so she doesn't mind him so much like that, because now she makes all the decisions. She kind of like, he's almost slave like in a way. And so he's kind of just, he's the gopher. He'll go and collect stuff and she'll like handle the business side. She ends up being a shopkeeper as well. And I thought that was just like a really interesting kind of very small, like not very minor part of the game. Like, I'm sure people would just kind of miss or ignore this story or this side quest. You don't really need to do it. But it was just kind of a funny interaction that you encounter and just learning more about the relationship between these two people. And you go and talk to them and like, he's kind of very happy-go-lucky and, you know, talks very fondly about his wife. And she's like, so derisive against him and just, yeah, nothing nice to say. And like, yeah, don't worry too much about him. Just kind of put him in his place. But obviously she wanted him around, you know, to help her out with the business and things like that. But I don't know. Just the game seems filled with moments and quests like these that are so easy to ignore. But if you do them, there's kind of an interesting narrative payoff and you get to learn a little bit about the characters involved.
Yeah, I missed that one completely. So that was a new one to me. I didn't spend too much time in that one. I probably should have explored more. I guess I had a similar experience in the, do you have Will as one of your companions?
No, I wanted to ask you about this too. You go on first, but I want to ask you more about companions and how to get them, because I feel like I've encountered people that I want to be a companion, but then I don't see an option to, or I don't know how to pursue that. But you go on first and then maybe tell me a little bit about how acquiring companions, I guess.
So there's this one guy, Will, and you would have met him when you first came across the druids, because when the goblins are attacking the druid camp, he's the one that comes out to help save, like to help fend them off. So I don't know if you probably can't get him now unless you can go back to that area, but you talk to him and you find out that he's actually like the son of the Duke. I don't know if you ran across the Duke Raven. I think it's Raven Guard. Basically, the guy in charge of Baldur's Gate is kidnapped in Act One, and it's Duke Raven Guard. And so one of the quests is like they want you to save the Duke. So I'm like, okay. So then as you're going along, you find it. Oh, it's actually Will's. This guy is Will's dad, and he's got this vested interest in saving him, or whatever. And I'm like, okay. So so we're going through the game, and then Act Three comes along, and his quest, like the way that it's described in his quest, is that he's at this one area. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go there later anyway, so I'm not gonna worry about it for now. And so I come across this there's like a submarine that you could take to this underwater prison.
Hmm.
And so I'm going to this underwater prison, and then one of the bosses knows I'm going there, and he threatens to blow up the prison if I go there.
Okay.
And I'm like, baloney, like it's a bluff, he's not gonna do it. And like basically as soon as I get there, he does set the like the self-destruct sequence. So you only get like 8 turns in the prison. So I kind of went in and got the things I wanted, and helped some people escape because I knew there was some people there. One of the quests I was doing was like helping get these prisoners out of this prison. So I get enough of the people out that the quest I was actually going there to get is completed. And so I get back to Baldur's Gate, and then all of a sudden the quest for Will's dad has changed, and I'm like, what happened? I found out that Will's dad was in the prison, and I drowned him.
Yeah. Well, had you known the stakes were so high, maybe you wouldn't have been so quick to assume a bluff, right? Like,
apparently he was in a room that I declined to go into.
Yeah.
And so when I went down there, I guess I was supposed to go down and, but it's funny, the game gave me a not so great option to revive him that I took.
Yes.
Because it didn't affect me personally, but my apologies to Will. It's not going to be much of a great life after my playthrough.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think that's just the case for many individuals that the two of us seem to be encountering. Not a lot of
it's happy not endings. A happy ending for everyone.
No, definitely not. I guess kind of in the same vein, and maybe with a similar conclusion that you're alluding to, there's the old hag and the witch in the swamp, I should say, who's kind of kidnapped this girl. I guess she's trying to use her in some kind of spell or some kind of ritual or something like that. And so that's a pretty tough fight if you end up going all the way through kind of the witch's lair.
Not if you use a void bulb.
Yes, exactly. See, yeah, for those not using the cheesing strategy, is like these fights were quite taxing, and I had to do them multiple times. I found a kind of a back entrance or a back way to sneak around for the actual fight against the swamp hag. But then the resolution of that quest is pretty interesting, where you get one of those choices of like, okay, we find the woman, the reason why she's there, she's trying to make a bargain to kind of save her dead husband, I guess. And so, you know, these kind of things never end well, right? But you're given a choice of kind of what you want to do with the dead husband when you kill the swamp hag. And she kind of bargains with you, like she'll give you some power if you let her go. And I think I ended up just killing her because I'm like, I was trying to be like, you know, the noble character at that point. I've done a few, obviously killing entire, you know, castles full of creatures is not the noble pursuit at all, but I'm trying to balance that out, I suppose, with some more noble deeds. At any rate, so we find the dead husband, and I've collected some item from the witch, and I guess you have this option to use it, right? Okay, and so she kind of the wife's like kind of pleading with you, yeah, you know, just use your power, like bring him back, and you kind of know, like the game's kind of hinting to you, like this is not, you know, it's not the way things should be, right? You're messing with the natural order of things. And so, I acquiesce. I bring the guy back because there's a little bit of, I don't know if it's one of my party members who said this, or maybe the narrator, there's some hinting that maybe there's something you can do later down the line to rectify any damage you cause. But yeah, anyways, you resurrect the husband. He comes back in zombie form, as you would expect. And then you have another choice to make. You can kind of enslave him and I guess have him follow you or help you or something like that. Maybe it comes like a party member.
You can make him like a summon.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Like another pet character for you to have.
Yeah.
Or you can send him off with the wife, and I guess you give her like the relic so she can kind of control him. You basically have this relic that allows you to resurrect and then control the dead. So I ended up giving it to her, and they kind of saunter off, or at least he shuffles or shambles off, and she's gonna, you know, she's happy about what's happened, right? Even though it's not the husband she wanted, she still seems hopeful about going to Baldur's Gate and hopefully, you know, bringing him back to real life as opposed to just a zombie form or something like that. But that was another fun one with, again, an interesting narrative payoff for all the hours of toil of fighting this witch and doing all the, you know, finding potions of invisibility to sneak around her lair and stuff like that. Like, oh my gosh, like it took me forever. But the fact that your struggles, your endeavors in this game seem to pay off every time. And that's what I think is really nice about it. Like, you never get to the end of a quest or a side quest and be like, oh, that's it. Like, I always feel like there's something interesting that comes out of whatever challenge you overcome. And that's the most compelling aspect of the game, I think, so far.
Well, and the good news for you is that you made the right choices in the sense where the payoff will continue.
Yes, because yes.
This is not the last time you've seen her.
I've gotten that. I've gotten that sense. Yeah, it's good.
So it's in Act 3, and it was like literally the last thing I did before the final boss gauntlet. And I'm so glad I did. I almost missed it. It's very easy to miss.
Feels very easy to miss, right? In some areas, I'm trying to be very thorough or kind of agonizing about the decision to go back and like do quests or not, feeling like, there probably is going to be payoffs and meeting characters further down the line.
Like if you just happen to go at the wrong time or something, then you can like the quest changes, or like there was this one near the end, there's like this thing that you're supposed to, this place you're supposed to get into, and there's like one way to do it is like they're kill certain people, whatever, because like you have to have certain objects to get in or whatever. Yeah, and I just happened to come across someone who was doing the same thing, but had already collected enough, so I just killed him and took his stuff.
Yes, of course, that's good.
So I'm like, it saves easy me some way. Trouble, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks for the assist.
Yeah, that's right. Save me some legwork.
Yeah. But, yeah, you really do have a freedom to kind of, it is such a playground type game. Like, again, someone without a lot of tabletop Dungeons and Dragons experience, like I relish this opportunity to kind of play it out in a video game form. Like, I think other RPGs, you know, even ones that might profess to be somewhat nonlinear, and to have like choices and consequences and all that, like the Mass Effect games or something, like it's so limited by comparison to what Larian's done here with Baldur's Gate 3. Like there's so much going on, and I feel like it could vary. I'm actually kind of glad this game wasn't available physically, because I can just have it downloaded on my console and presumably there for a long time. Like I can definitely see myself coming back, rolling a new character, trying things a completely different way, and realizing that it would be like playing a different game, you know, like that there's so many possible alternatives and conclusions to quests and stuff like that. Like I'm so eager to get through it eventually, and it's going to be a slow burn for me. I'm not rushing to finish this in 2023 necessarily, but an hour or two here or there, getting through maybe one part of a major quest or one side quest at a time, I'm happy to play it like that. It has been a very enjoyable experience.
Well, I can finish up with one last anecdote on how I actually finished the game, and so this will be helpful at the point that you're at, because it'll be good to know some of this information. So
excellent.
I think you actually have it now. Potentially, there's a quest called "Build Your Allies" or something to that effect. It might not come to Act 3. I can't remember exactly, but there's a running tally in the quest section where it's like it's called "Build Your Allies" and it shows a list of all the allies that will help you.
I love
in like the final boss battle.
Yeah.
And essentially you want to build that up, because as I found out, there's this one. So anyway, I got, you know, I'm doing all the quests. I'm trying to sign up everyone to my cause that I can.
Yes.
And there's a few choices to make like right before the end boss, that I kind of went the selfish route a little bit. I wasn't the noble hero. I was still like the hero, but I wasn't the noble hero.
Yeah.
I was leaning on my team. I'll put it that way. Leaning on my team to do some things I wasn't willing to do. And so one guy actually backstabbed me went with the enemy, and I was like, "You bugger." I was so mad at him. And then anyway, so I'm in the final boss, and at that point you can call upon all of the people that you have in this list. Essentially most of them didn't make it out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. There were very few that got out alive. I was one of them. I got the ending that I wanted, in the sense that the game ended with me drinking beer in a bar.
Okay, could there be anything more fitting than that? I don't think so.
I was having a good time. You know, the world was saved. The enemy that needed to be defeated was defeated. Maybe not the way that like Heroes of Legends would be talked about. But I certainly went out unscathed. I had a couple friends that made it. The character that I had romanced had made it. And maybe one or two others, and that was good for me. We were all having pints.
Sounds like a happy ending, definitely.
Yeah, there wasn't much left of every like. I don't want to spoil too much, but the area that I was in, there were not too many buildings standing up.
So, you definitely.
But the bar was there, and that's all I needed.
If one building is left standing, let it be the tavern. Yeah. This is a game where you do certainly get your comeuppance. You know, if you make a decision, it seems like it's gonna come back. Whatever that decision may be, or whatever you say the right thing or the wrong thing to someone, it's gonna come back around at some point, right? This game does such a good job of making you feel like every decision, every choice, every kind of movement or move is one that will have some, you know, future implications, right? So, and again, that's another part that makes it really compelling. Before we wrap up, I did want to ask you about just recruiting companions. Is there something I maybe am missing out on, or something I need to be doing, or maybe a way to go about doing that? Like, I feel like I don't know if you can have more than three people. Like, I feel like should I be able to have more than three people in my party at one time, right? And including my pets.
I feel like I think I had like, I gotta say, like 12 to 15 people in my camp by the time.
Yeah. Because how many people can actually come out with you, like, to fight?
On any given time, only, okay, I'll say this. Up until the final battle, you can only ever have the three people in your party.
Got it. Okay. That's really all I wanted to know is that, you know, am I missing out on having like five or six people on the battlefield, or is it just these three that I've got? I mean, if it's just three, that's fine.
But in the final battle, I think there might have been 80 people on the battlefield.
That's nuts. That's just nuts.
I think my computer was like about to melt.
Yeah.
Because I had a huge part, like, and there was a ton of enemies.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of people, and I was just calling people in, tapping them in.
That sounds so fun. Like, I remember Dragon Age doing something similar with, like, the more friendships you had, the more people joined you for the final battle. I love that. I love games that do something like that. It really makes you feel like building up those friendships was worth it.
I forgot to level up a couple people, so they didn't last in the fight very long.
I guess that would be the
other piece of advice I'd give anyone is that you know, you could travel with your three, but before you go to the final party, you should add the people back into your party so that you can level them up properly.
Yeah.
So they don't get one-shotted.
They gave their lives valiantly for the cause, even if it was as a cannon fodder.
They bought me the extra turn I needed to win. So.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's like, I'm trying to remember. There's Will, Lavelle, Shadowheart, Karlak, Gale, Jahira.
I just did the thing with her at the end because she seems so powerful with her like ice storm spell.
She's very, very useful. Halsin. Who are the other ones? There's a couple that I don't want to name because they're kind of spoilerish.
No, that's good. It's good for me to kind of keep in mind names and be looking out for folks. But really, my main hang up was, am I okay with just the three people that I'm wondering about with, and then my bear and my spider?
You can get through the whole game with, like, I pretty much just used three people the entire game, except I brought Asterion in for his quest.
Okay.
So I temporarily used him, but then it was always Karlak, Gale, and Shadowheart for
the
rest of the game.
Got it. Yeah, good enough.
But I definitely had a large group of people signed up to help me so that I could do that final. And they have to be in the list of that ally quest. So you'll see the quest and it'll list everyone. It'll literally say, like, oh, you finished the quest for, you know, Jahira, and she's going to help you in the final battle. Like, you have to have that list of people there.
Sounds good.
And Ed actually lost one guy, and it said, "Oh, he's, you know, he's mad, and he's, you know, did something, and he's gone."
Yeah, defected.
And so I had to go like fix the problem.
Okay. Oh, that's funny. You can bring him back.
And then it updated in the quest that he would help in the final battle, and I'm like, okay, good.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It pays to make friends along the way, I suppose, is the lesson here.
Yep.
I definitely want to revisit this game maybe early next year, end of this year, something like that. Just kind of share some final thoughts, and you know, maybe it'd be even around Game of the Year time, obviously, when we're chatting about that, because it'll be, I think a lot of people are going to be talking about this game in addition to, you know, Tears of the Kingdom, stuff like that. But yeah, I know I'll have made more progress by then, so it'll be fun to kind of summarize how my final thoughts, I guess, after rolling the credits, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thanks everybody for joining us for another discussion of Baldur's Gate. I was happy to share some thoughts about the game with you, to hear more of David's thoughts after getting through the game himself. We have some interesting episodes coming up soon. We're planning to do another 5-hour trial of Death Stranding this time. So we've both got that on our consoles. David's already started, I want to say playing it, but I think watching is probably a better verb to use. We've also got a bunch of demos were released recently for games like Star Ocean 2, Silent Hope, and Dragon Quest Monsters. So I think we're going to share some demo impressions next week ahead of those games coming out in the not too distant future. If you have other ideas for episodes or games you would like us to cover, please email david@thethirstymage.com. You can always leave us a review on your podcast app or Spotify with a comment about a game you'd love for us to wax poetic about on the podcast. But I think that'll do us for tonight. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.
Bye.